to the 196th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Thank you for listening. Before we get started, I want to remind you all that we're coming up on our fourth annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. It's March 30th. It's going to be a great day of sugar-free, oil-free, salt-free breakfast and lunch that's very plant strong in a beautiful location at Twin Isles Country Club in Punta Gorda. Room full of positive people, but small enough that you can ask your questions of the speakers. You can come in a day early and have a consultation with Addie or myself. You can get tickets for all those things on eventbrite.com or go to drdelaney.com and click on the button that'll link you to eventbrite.com. Besides myself, Addie Delaney Meinert will be speaking, and we're going to have Nathan Meinert speaking on, he's a strength and conditioning coach, and in a week or so, we're going to have a big announcement on some great things that he is up to, and we're going to have as featured speaker Dr. Alan Goldhammer from True North Health, so it'll be a great day. You get to ask, you know, questions, again, have great lunch, mingle with people that similar interests that are positive and energetic and share ideas. You know, you don't have to be in a room wondering what you can eat. You don't have to be in a room with, people that aren't plant-based and, you know, negative Nellies and all this, all those things. So bring your friends, bring your family. It's a great day. And Punta Gorda is it's a great time of year to be in Punta Gorda. Sunshine and blue skies, nice walking paths, running paths. To get out on, you can do kayaking, all kinds of outdoor activities here. It's obviously golf, boating. So come on down and see us, and I look forward to meeting you. If you're new to the podcast, I am a cardiologist, primary care person. And I run a plant-based wellness practice here in Port Charlotte, Florida. And we take people that really want to get healthy and get off their medication, reverse lifestyle diseases, or perhaps prevent lifestyle diseases that run heavily in their family. So it's a great way to live. It was a giant practice revitalizer for me after practicing traditional cardiology for around 20 years. So, it's nice to be able to teach people how to eat kale and green vegetables and get off their medications and not have chest pain as opposed to standing in the heart catheterization laboratory all day long. I am also an endurance athlete, and I have several running events coming up. The next one is Thrill in the Hills in Georgia, north of Georgia, and I'm doing that with Addie Delaney Meinert and Michael Hubbard. So we're going to be the Plant Strong crew doing that race. Training's going well. Getting up in the long runs. This weekend will be an 18-miler for me. And then increasing those sandwich runs on the day after. So, increasing the mileage on the second day as well as the first day. So mileage is pretty high and feeling pretty good. So hopefully that'll keep up. And then the taper will start one more long run, and then I'll start a bit of a taper. Not too drastic. Maybe try to add a little speed work in, see how I feel. But it's also about getting me ready for hills, living here in the flatlands of Florida. So also doing weight training and a lot of movement to keep myself or get myself ready to go up and down hills and have my legs and my back and everything tolerate that. Mobility is a big aspect of all that training as well. So really focusing on hip mobility, leg mobility, and just keeping loose lower back mobility to keep things loose and going. So that's all going good. My other hobby is this backyard gardening, and happy to report that here in sunny Southwest Florida, we have not had a frost. So the mango blooms are still doing great, more and more coming out. So it should be a good mango season. Have some lemons, have some nice oranges this year on neighbor's tree. So I'm enjoying those as well right now. Tomatoes are blooming, and actually have harvested some tomatoes off my tower garden and off my plants in the raised beds. Have some herbs going, cilantro, thyme, parsley, and basil. have harvested some broccoli, have some cauliflower starting, Napa cabbage, and I'm competing with some bugs over that. So we're trying to get that going, trying some different areas to see if we can get that going. And then we have a variety of peppers, Thai chili peppers, poblano peppers, jalapeno peppers. So it's all good. And we just keep learning as we go with the backyard garden. But it's fun to come out every afternoon and check and see how things are going. Play a little frisbee with the dogs and check on the garden and watch things grow. So here in Port Charlotte, we have three nutrition classes in my office. We have a level one, level two, and level three. And in our level two and three classes, we have been doing menu planning. So the group is advanced enough. Most people are completely plant-based. And most people are doing a fair amount of cooking, especially, 100% of people in level three are completely plant-based and oil-free and salt-free and, for the most part, sugar-free. And level two is probably 80% plant-based. And then we have a level one class that are new. And so level two this week, we decided to menu plan because sometimes when people fall off the plant-based wagon, they say they're bored or run out of ideas. So I thought we'd do a full week's menu so they would have something to go on, keep it in their back pocket. So if they have a day that they don't know what they're going to have, they can pull this menu out or part of it out and build upon it. So we came up with seven dinners. On Monday, we did a fiesta bean soup and a side salad. And on Tuesday, there was a sweet potato apple casserole with sides of greens as well as beans. So that was good. An Irish stew on Wednesday. And I'll have a story about that in a little bit later, but obviously it's an Irish stew without any meat, carrots, cabbage, onions, butter beans, potatoes, celery. Thursday, carrot fritters with greens, pinto beans, portobello mushrooms, and we did a butternut squash soup and red lentil with red lentils and a salad for Friday. Saturday was plant-based pizza without cheese, of course, and Sunday was a baked potato with mushroom gravy and a side of greens. So we did that menu, and we wrote the recipes all out and a shopping list so everybody could have that. That's a member of the practice. So that was a lot of fun. Everybody contributed, and it worked out really well. Interestingly, I went to a health fair at a local gym. And we took recipes that we have in the practice to give as a gift or a handout. And one lady came up, she came up and she looked at the ingredients and she says, "Irish stew, there should be lamb in that," and didn't quite understand the plant-based nature of it. And then, another lady came up and she read through the ingredients and her husband was standing behind her. And nobody really wanted to come up to our booth. They really were shy about coming up to, plant-based nutrition table. But they look at the recipes and it's like, "Oh, my husband would never eat that." But in reality of it is you could tell that, no, they actually would never really eat it. And it wasn't, when I say it was a health fair, it was a gym that was an attempt to have some health fair. To me, I didn't see much in the way of health there. There was a body sculpting booth where they freeze your fat, so to speak. Do a little bit of aesthetics on the outside while the inside rots. Wasn't very impressed. I didn't go over and talk to them. There was also a B12 injections booth so you could get things cured by getting, B12 injections. And it was kind of fun to watch. People would come in if somebody had gimmicks. There was actually a chiropractor that was giving out thin mints. And, somebody else spinning for, little gimmicks and toys for hearing aids. And then there was a vinegar and olive oil table set up next to us. And, so obviously that's not something that, you know, went very well with, our message. So that health fair didn't go to, we weren't the right people for the people there, and the people weren't the right people for our practice. Some people did take a recipe or two, but for the most part, people didn't want anything, any part about having to cook or do anything different. And it's kind of interesting because one of the people that work at the gym made a comment that they were too busy taking classes to be exercising lately, and they hope to get back into their own exercise program. And I didn't have a comeback for that. I think that when you can't take care of yourself, how could you possibly take care of somebody else? And if you're not mindful of your own health, then you can't be mindful of other people's health. So, you know, you have to get your own house in order first before you start, you know, looking after helping other people get their house in order. So it was quite of an interesting afternoon of observations. This is the time of year for everybody to get healthy. New Year's resolution, knock off a few pounds. Of course, a lot of people want to do it as quickly as they possibly can. And, you know, we know that doesn't last. You know, people look to New Year's resolution and getting weight off as some sort of punishment for having enjoyed themselves too much from Thanksgiving to Christmas. So they start this yo-yo effect where they're going to cleanse, or they're going to eat clean, or they're going to fast, or water fast, or fruit fast, or juice fast. And they're just, you know, using it as a means so they can eat what they want in between, as long as the scale says what they want. It doesn't matter how you get there. And we all know that, that's really not the way to become healthy or reverse disease. It's more of a marathon than it is a sprint. You can get a lot of, short-term positive gains, but as far as reducing your risk for lifestyle diseases, it's not something that you do for a couple weeks and it's over. It's your lifestyle. So it's you know, it's interesting to see the panic in people in January, and you know, and the quick fixes that people offer. You know, whether it's freeze your fat or you know, go to the gym and kind of go through the motions with some of these. The machines, you know, so you go through and you get a trainer and they take you through the machines. Then they don't want people to get too sore too quick. So, you know, it's same old thing, same old thing. And people go in and put their 30 minutes in and they think something's great going to happen. And then they get bored and they go away. So there's no real plan, you know, doing the same thing over and over. It leads to the same results, basically. And we see that in the practice as far as, people continue to do the same thing and are shocked that they're not getting different results. Whether it's eat healthy for a couple days and then not healthy, or try to keep one foot in the, you know, I can eat, if I can just figure out how to eat just a little bit of potato chips and a little bit of ice cream and a little bit of junk food, but then be healthy most of the time, I can do it. And, you know, I've yet to see anybody pull this off that, really ate one way or another and ate the junk food and was able to, you know, eat enough health food that they would be okay. Maybe when you're really young, you can pull off because you're so energetic. But the reality of it is, you know, the more you fight being able to eat these bad things and still be healthy, it's probably going to backfire. And, it, you know, I have to kind of circle back. The other thing that I saw at the health fair was, you know, what do you do with the information that you have? There was a person checking glucoses and blood pressures, and they weren't a nurse or a physician. And the blood pressure cuff, you know, if you get your blood pressure taken by someone with an automated cuff, those cuffs are very inaccurate. And they're very inaccurate, even more inaccurate if it's the wrong size cuff. So if a man has a large arm or a woman has a large arm and they put the standard size cuff, it's going to overread that blood pressure by 20 or 30 points. And a lot of times, if you have an irregular heart rate, it's going to read the blood pressure wrong. But they're used inappropriately. They shouldn't be used in doctor's offices, but they are. And it was used in this gym, and I saw, you know, a person that works at the gym checked some young man's blood pressure who had big muscular arms, and she said, your blood pressure is 144 over 90. And she said, technically it's abnormal if your blood pressure is over 140 over 90. And that was kind of it. And so they're just going to ignore it. And I couldn't help myself. I had to walk over and say, no, that's not an accurate blood pressure. That cuff doesn't fit his arm. And, we don't wait, we're not comfortable with people's blood pressure of 144 over 90 and just, okay, that's it. We have to address that situation. Because we know, anything over 120 over 70, there's increasing risk. And certainly 130 over 70 to 80 is, deemed hypertensive, but the treatment is the same at these blood pressures that you need to, start introducing lifestyle changes to lower the blood pressure. So you have this young guy that if his blood pressure is in the 140s with his cuff, it's probably really 125, 128. But, it would be a good time to address lifestyle changes to maintain, a good blood pressure or get back into a good blood pressure. Same thing with glucose readings. So they were taking people's glucose and they had no idea what to do with the results. So how does that help you if somebody walks in and they're not fasting and you don't know when they ate, nobody's asking, you don't know if they ate just before they came in or just after what they had. So nobody's addressing what to do with this random glucose number. So I think we have to worry about, random blood tests and it's nice when things are free, but what are you going to do with the results when you get these screening tests that are done without anybody really knowing what they're doing, whether there's any control for accuracy. So really be careful, what you let people that don't have any healthcare training do to you and the accuracy of their equipment. It can lead to a whole lot of confusion. And what are you going to do with the results? I suppose if it was be enough to jar somebody into starting to eat more healthy or starting to look at their sodium intake, that would be great. But for the majority of people, they just ignore the number and go on. In our level one class, this time we have a whole new group of people, and it's a real pleasure to. We were there, I think, well over an hour and a half. And I went longer than I usually try to keep it, just a little over an hour, but everybody was so interested and attentive and had questions that it was such a good session. I didn't really want to stop until we had a lot of things covered and that I felt comfortable getting people comfortable, because when you decide to change your diet and become plant-based, all of a sudden there are all these rules of eating. There's a couple young families in the class, and so they grew up eating a certain way. Some of them eating very poorly, and suffering health consequences at young ages. But nevertheless, now they want to change, and so what's the appropriate speed to make this change? If you were eating burgers and pizza and Twinkies, and then you want to go to sugar-free, salt-free, oil-free, whole food, plant-based, how do you do that and sustain it? And how much pressure is that on somebody that's never cooked or been around anybody that cooked to be able to do this? And then all of a sudden there are all these rules when you look at the books as far as you can't have this, you can't have that. And it becomes so frustrating that people want to quit, or they're just tired of failing all the time, despite what they're doing, or how to get food on the table, how to stay full. One of the women in the group, she said, my husband is going to be really supportive. I made this bok choy salad, bok choy, pomegranates, mandarin oranges, and sliced almonds and with a lemon juice dressing. And it's like, well, is this for a side or is this for a main meal? Because my husband's never going to stay full if I serve this for dinner. And it's of course not. And I think that's where people fail, that, all of a sudden they're going to just have a salad. And while that bok choy had plenty of nitric oxide producing greens, and vitamin C and phytonutrients with the pomegranates and a lot of fiber, and some omega-3s and, anti-cancer fighting properties with a lemon and lemon juice, it still is not going to keep people full as for a dinner unless they, you know, eat, you know, a couple pounds of it. So you have to know that you got to add something else and how to make this a complete meal. But it can be so overwhelming at first. It's like, no, this is, you know, this is a side. And, you know, we give people handouts as far as pick one from each category, as far as greens, starch, or grain, whole grain, and then other vegetables. But it's a lot to learn, and there are a lot of rules. And, you know, again, going from no rules to pretty strict rules if you, you know, do whole food plant-based, it can be a little overwhelming. So that's where we are, to try to help people and to educate them, you know, what you can cook, how to get things on the table, especially if it's you know, you're under the fire and you need to get some food on the table quickly, you know, and just to transition, you know, get breakfast down, get your lunches down, how to help kids get, you know, some more fruit into their diet. You know, one of the people were, sometimes people can't lose weight on a plant-based diet, and it turns out that they're doing a lot of smoothies that can be really calorie dense. People have heard that omega-3s in nuts, so they start putting a bunch of nuts in the blender or nut butter in the blender because they think they've got to get their protein. They start doing hummus for lunch that's store-bought that contains a lot of oil, and their weight stays up because, you know, when you smash things and there's oil in it, it's very calorie dense. So, and of course, everybody's worried about not getting enough protein, not getting enough of what they actually need. And, you know, it goes one of two ways. Either they watch their portions so they're not getting full, or they start adding all this calorie dense stuff so that they get too many calories, too much oil, and don't end up, you know, getting any weight off despite wanting to, or even gaining weight. And I certainly don't want the message being, you know, an hour and 15 minutes of what you can't do. I want it to be what you can do. And I think that's why the menu planning was so good, to see that there was, you know, a variety of foods and everything was different. There wasn't one vegetable that was repeated for the 5-day menu. And even in the level one class, you know, you start with the basics. So, you know, as far as look to see if you're having a grain or you're having a starch, and don't worry about the portion size. Get the potato, get things that you like on the baked potato. You know, make sure you're getting enough greens, make sure you're getting enough grains. You know, you can microwave things are allowed. You can transition foods, you know, with young kids, if you have to use some, tofu crumbles or some, Gardein products, to have a little bit of, you know, animal protein, nugget, then I think that's perfectly fine, as long as you're working to get the other things, you know, to have those other vegetables in there. You know, somebody asked me about popcorn, and, you know, popcorn doesn't have much in the way of nutrients. It's a snack food. It's, you know, it's something that people eat mindlessly. And if somebody's overweight or somebody has diabetes or somebody has trouble with portion control, then popcorn can end up adding a lot of calories to a diet. On the other hand, if somebody is very, very active and they're just having some popcorn in the evening and they control the amount of it, it's not a problem. But you have to take into account, you know, what you're going to use it for. You might, you know, my diabetics or my heart failure patients would be much better served with getting an extra dose of, you know, greens in the evening. So snacking on cauliflower and cabbage with a little mustard is a much better choice than popcorn. You know, again, the diabetics, color and variety and fiber is really, really crucial. So making sure that people are getting the 4 to 5 cups of greens in each day. When we went to the health fair, you know, I worked, we had to actually add a couple patients on. And so we were running a little bit late, and I had I brought my lunch, and I had some soup, and I had a bag of kale, and, you know, I didn't have that much time to eat it. So I stuck it in the microwave, and I stuck that whole bag of kale, obviously in a glass dish, not in the plastic bag. I stuck it in the microwave with, some nutritional yeast. It was probably 3 cups of kale chopped up, and it just fit nicely in a little bowl. And I ate that with my soup and had some quinoa and fruit for dessert. And it was a great and quick lunch. So just kind of knowing that you can, you know, you can get things on the table pretty quickly. And knowing that I wanted to have my greens at each of the meals. I wanted to have some sort of grain. And you know, and I wanted to have my fruit at each meal. So if you just, you kind of get the basics, and it's just becoming comfortable with it. Today we menu planned again for the level 3 class, and the menus were fabulous. I would send these menus to, or these entrees to any vegan restaurant, and they would be a wonderful selection. You know, there was a tempeh dish with beans and collards and beets, and there was a polenta stack and a butternut squash and red pear bake with bean salad. There was a green soup. There was a casserole with green beans and potatoes and zucchini and peppers, as well as a kale salad. There was a stuffed cabbage dish. There was a mushroom walnut burger. So, I mean, it was fabulous foods that would be great at any restaurant that the class came up with. That was great to be able to share. And, you know, somebody brought up the ideas, or brought up the comment that, you know, there are just so many things that you can eat. You never would have to repeat your entree for months on end. There's just so many possibility when you're combining different vegetables. If you just kind of get the basics, that you have your grains and you have your greens and you have some beans and other vegetables, then the sky's the limit on how you can really combine those things. And the other thing that I wanted to touch on was movement again. You know, my practice is a wellness practice that focuses on plant-based nutrition, but it also focuses on movement and keeping active. And I started my wellness, the wellness aspect of my practice a lot of years ago when I started running marathons and trying to get people to move and to exercise. And I've always been a proponent of training and pushing yourself. And there's a lot of controversy of late as far as the minimal amount that you need to exercise and is there a maximal amount that you need to exercise. And there's a couple studies that came out here recently, one in the American Journal of Cardiology in December, and they actually looked at the body mass index of people that was normal compared to those who were overweight and how much exercise they did. And if people didn't get the 150 minutes of exercise, which is the American Heart Association suggests that you should get 150 minutes a week, they had increased risk of events despite their other risk factors, such as being, so they could, you could be of normal weight and not exercise and be in the same, you know, have some of the same risks for cardiovascular disease as people that were overweight. So you need to exercise 150 minutes a week to lower your risk about 58%. Because as we get older, lose muscle mass, lose bone mass if you're not actively exercising. And that ultimately leads to increased fat mass. So even if you're a normal mass, but a lot of it's fat instead of muscle and bone, then you can still be in trouble even if your body mass index is in normal range. If you look at people that didn't exercise, you know, they had just about a 5% increased risk over, if you looked at people with a normal body mass index, they had a 30% risk of events. And if you looked at people that were overweight and didn't exercise, about 35% increased risk of events. So the bottom line is that, you know, you can be, you know, a sick, skinny person. If you're not moving, you still have a significant risk of cardiovascular events. So the best way is to be a normal body mass, have a normal body mass index and exercise, and there's no upper limit for the amount of exercise. The benefits continue to occur. And then there was another study that looked at, it was published in the Journal of American Medical Association, that looked at cardiorespiratory fitness and risk of long-term mortality. And it divided people up into age groups and how much they could exercise on a treadmill test, and then looked at their overall mortality. And turned out they followed them 8 years, and there were 13,000 people, 637. And they looked at, they did an exercise test early on, then they looked at their mortality and they looked at their risk factors. And your ability to exercise and is strongly associated with your longevity. So people that of any age group that had a that were terribly out of shape were much likely had a much increased risk of mortality over people that were very, very fit. And there was as much of an 80% difference in mortality between the lowest groups and the highest groups. And it, you know, a lot of people and some people out there may have had stress tests and not sure what they were doing. The doctor put them on a treadmill and then said, okay, you've had enough. The idea of a treadmill test was initially to assess someone's functional status as opposed to any EKG changes they were to have. So when we didn't have imaging modalities, we watched people's blood pressure and their heart rate and their oxygen saturation, and even measured some CO2 and oxygenation while they exercised. And the idea was for it to be symptom limited, so people walked as far as they could. And there was a protocol that's a most standard protocol, is called a Bruce protocol. So every 3 minutes, you increase the speed of the treadmill and the grade of the treadmill until people couldn't go any further. And the baseline estimate was 220 minus your age was the idea of what their predicted maximum heart rate would be for your for their age. So as you get older, you can only get your heart rate to a certain, you know, your ability to get your heart rate up decreases. So 100% of predicted maximum heart rate for, you know, a 10-year-old is a lot more than it is for a 70-year-old. But then we started having, and the idea to increase the grade and the speed, it was standardized so we could tell someone's exertional capacity. So if you were to exercise 3 METs of exertion, it's the equivalent of making your bed. If you could do 10 METs, it was the equivalent of shoveling snow. So if you put somebody on the treadmill and they could go 10 minutes, which was just a little over 10, 11 METs, then they were safe and they had an excellent prognosis in general. And those people could go out and do things such as dig ditches and shovel snow without a significant risk. And the longer you could go, the better you know, the better your the better fit that you were. And we also could see how quickly your heart rate would go up when you started to get on the, you know, when you started to exercise. So if you first got on the treadmill and in a couple minutes your heart rate went up really fast, then that was a sign of deconditioning. And so we could give people exercise prescriptions so that they could go and they could train. And you know, sometimes after cardiac rehab, they would repeat the stress test and see if they got better. Well, when nuclear imaging started to come, it was determined that you could, the nuclear material was taken up once the heart rate got about 85% of the estimated predicted maximum heart rate, then you could stop the treadmill test early because that would give you enough to get a good perfusion study. Well, we started looking at these pictures, but we forgot about all this great information that you could get from having people go as long as they possibly could on a treadmill test. And so when the imaging were imagings, sometimes they were kind of borderline positive or you know, not quite positive, not quite negative, or suggestive of something, then, you know, what do you do with that information? If somebody had exercised, you know, 12 minutes, and so that was a great functional capacity, and they didn't have any chest pain, but their nuclear imaging was a little bit borderline, well, maybe it was a false positive. So you could take that into account. But when people started stopping the treadmill at 85% and not taking people till they were, you know, they couldn't go any further, then you have this, well, I could have gone further, but the, you know, the technician or the doctor stopped the treadmill test. I didn't have any chest pain, but I really wasn't pushed that far. But yet these tests were equivocal. So they end up getting another invasive procedure, you know, a heart catheterization. And sometimes these heart catheterizations would find blockages that were 60, 70%. Then people would get a stent for having absolutely no symptoms whatsoever. So it's really important that we, you know, we go back and look at all this extra information that we can get. So there was a study that finally, again, came out looking at people's ability to exercise. And it, once again, independent of all your risk factors, whether you have high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, if you can exercise to an elite level or high level of activity, then you're very protected. You know, as far as it's a mortality improvement, or your chances of living are a lot better than somebody that may not have a lot of the risk factors, but is very, very out of shape. And again, there wasn't any upper limit to the sky's the limit. The better shape you are, the better benefits that you get. So, take home message is that, you know, one, if you are going to submit yourself to a test, then let's have it done at a reputable place where there's a physician, and let's have some guidelines as far as this is going to be symptom limited. What are we looking at, and what are we going to do with the results? If it is an equivocal test and it's stopped early, what do we do with those results? So it's really important to check out where you're going to have a test, and it's really important to determine why you're going to have a test. If it's to decide whether you need a heart catheterization or not, or it's just a screen. You know, if you're not having any symptoms at all, then do you really want to submit to a heart catheterization? Because the chances are it's not going to make you live longer or live better. So it's really important that you know why you're doing a test and what are you going to do with the answer before you proceed. But beyond that, it's extremely important to not just say what's the minimum amount I need to exercise, but what is the most physically fit I can get? You know, how can I increase my fitness? And I got to tell you, you can do it at any age. We have a patient in our practice, and, you know, so proud of her that she's went from having a bypass and a valve replacement, and she's now walking on the treadmill. When I first met her, she was having trouble passing out and using a walker, and now she's walking on the treadmill and going on vacation and doing quite well. So well into her 80s, you can be you can gain fitness and gain mobility. So it's important at any age to concentrate on being as fit as you possibly can. It doesn't mean going out and pounding the pavement is, you know, to you, your hands are on your knees and you can't breathe, but this steady, continuous exertion, you know, marathon time, the time that we're on our feet, it doesn't have to be a higher heart rate, a continuous pace, but you want your heart rate up a little bit and you want a continuous. And it is good to train with a heart rate monitor when you get older so that you can not train too high of a heart rate, but just keep this steady exertion that even Dr. Mark Cugazzella and I talked about, that, you know, you just become so cardiovascular fit and your muscles are so much more likely to utilize energy and oxygen so much more efficiently. And now we know you also have an increased longevity associated with being fit despite your other risk factors. So the take-home message is, you know, get out and move and train in any level, in any age. Measure yourself against yourself and try to get more fit. And so that, to me, is a good resolution for this January, is to try to improve your fitness, but one step at a time, not being extremely aggressive, that you've got to do it all now. Make it, you know, over the course of the year, you want to increase your walk time or your duration, so you let your whole body come and become in shape together. And you know, the last thing I'll look at the level one nutrition class. And, you know, we talked about the continuum of eating. You know, if you're starting to Twinkies and you're trying to head to kale, you got to worry about this, you know, worry about the small stuff before, you know, the big stuff. So let's get you over to eating vegetables and more greens in your diet. And not worry so much about, you know, whether everything's organic or where, you know, where to buy things, or, you know, if there's transition foods, or if there's, you know, a few nuts here and there, especially when people are starting out. Let's get the meat and the dairy out of the diet, get the toxins out of the diet. You know, if you get the fish out of the diet, you're getting rid of the dioxins, the mercury and the lead. So get that out of your diet. And then you start honing in on how much organic you can eat, making sure that you're not eating genetically modified things, you know, making sure that your diet is well-rounded. I think people get too caught up in, you know, certain rules or watching for rules. And then they get all twisted up and they can't pull it off and they get frustrated and stop. On the other hand, when you know better, and you want to, you know, take it to the next level, then you have to start being more mindful. Walking into a room full of cookies that are from a bakery, you know that there's going to be eggs and butter in there, and those aren't an option for you. You know, so you're looking for eggs and things, so you're starting to be more mindful about what things are in. And if you're trying to lose weight, then you avoid, you know, excessive sugars, excessive fats, processed foods. But eating plant-based, the weight falls off of you very slowly and naturally. And if it's not, then chances are there's a lot of condiments that have calories, a lot of pastas, a lot of bread, or there's a lot of oils and nut butters. So again, you start being more mindful, get plant-based first, and then work your way into it for most people. On the other hand, if you're very, very ill, and you have chest pain and you're trying to, or you have a really bad heart and you're trying to get things under control, then you really need to work with someone that can help you be sugar, oil, salt free and get your greens and get the most nutrients in possible and the most nutrient dense diets that's able to look at your blood work and focus in on what you need to focus, whether it's inflammation, anemia, liver function. So, you know, you need somebody that's in tune to that. So it's not all one for everybody. It's not a cookbook. It's meeting people where they are and adjusting their diet accordingly and not having people become too frustrated and all the no's, but supporting them through the yeses. And but again, providing enough education that people can make transitions that are meaningful. If you like to learn about our practice more, please email me at jamie@drdelaney.com. It's jami@drdelaney.com. The website is drdelaney.com, all spelled out, drdelaney. Please check it out. Please come to see us at our conference, 4th annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. I'd love to meet you, but I'd certainly love to work with you wherever you are to help you get off your medications and to help you become more healthy and to meet you where you are. And our aim is for people to be successful. I'm not in it for the yo-yo. I'm in it for the lifelong benefits that people get when they understand and they learn how to take back their health and do things in increments that keeps them moving forward, not yo-yoing backwards and forwards. So I hope some of that was of good help. I hope you're encouraged to go exercise. I've got an 18-mile run in the morning. I hope it goes well. I'm not worried about how fast I do it. I just want to get it done and get it done feeling well and keep moving forward and enjoying the weather and enjoying being outside. So I hope you get your activity in outside and make a plan to be as healthy as you can for January. And until then, I'll speak with you next week.